Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 147, recorded Wednesday, January 5th, 2011. Big Blue Button. Welcome to Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. You may have noticed, the observant amongst you will have noticed, that I'm not Randall Schwartz. Unfortunately, Randall's away this week on a cruise, but I'll be your host for this week. My name's Dan Lynch. You may have heard me on Linux Outlaws, and you will also have heard me on Floss Weekly before. So it's good to be here and steering the ship and all that kind of stuff. I had to work in a cruise reference there with steering the ship. Anyway, I'm joined today by Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, how are you doing?
Hey, good. I don't think we've actually talked before, so this is a real treat.
No, exactly. Yeah, first time. So it's good to meet you. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm a big fan.
I was just
kind
of waving there on the web.
Yeah, there you Sorry. Go. I was just going to say I'm a big fan of Linux Outlaws. It's one of the podcasts I recommend to people that are looking to learn more. So I think it's a real treat to be here with you and co-hosting this episode.
Excellent. Thank you. So today's guest is Fred Dixon from Big Blue Button. And Big Blue Button is an online conferencing tool, I suppose you would call it. It's used primarily in education and it enables you to do teleconferencing, to share your desktop, do all kinds of cool collaborative things for distance learning and other such things. And it's all built on open source tools, which is very cool. So, any thoughts on that, Aaron?
Well, I'm really excited to talk about Big Blue Button because I've used other tools like DimDim and WebEx and similar tools to do things. And also, obviously, I use a lot of video for my video podcast. So I'm kind of curious to see how different Big Blue Button is and how they're using open source to do distance learning. I think it's really exciting.
Okay, so let's go ahead and bring on our guest for today, Fred Dixon from the Big Blue Button Project. Can you hear us, Fred?
You're sounding great.
That's great. So where are we speaking to you from today?
So I'm currently in Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada. So if I end my sentence with an A every now and then, I'll give myself away.
Excellent. So I gave a little introduction to Big Blue Button at the top of the show, but for the benefit of the listeners and the viewers, can you give us an overview of what Big Blue Button is and what it does?
Absolutely. So Big Blue Button is an open source project that's directed towards building a real-time web conferencing system for distance education. So the goal of the project is to enable universities to offer remote students a high-quality learning experience. So it's the voice, the video, the chat, the slides, the desktop sharing. And you might think of it, that sounds like generic web conferencing. And there are about 150 commercial web conferencing systems out there. There are very few open source ones. And Big Blue Button is trying to be a very good, viable alternative for commercial web conferencing systems for universities and colleges.
Excellent. So how long has the project been going for then?
So it started about 3.5 years ago, actually here at Carleton University. There was a master's program that's being taught and still is taught called the Technology Innovation Management Program. It was teaching engineers how to be entrepreneurs, and they were wanting to open the course up to students abroad in Europe and South America, all over the world. And of course, to do that, you need to have some way for students to join a course remotely. So they were using a commercial system, and it was not cheap. And then the head of the program, Tony Belletti, said, "This is silly. We're teaching engineers to be entrepreneurs. Why don't we try building the system?" And they worked at it for about a year and got it going. I joined the project shortly afterwards. And it's been about 2.5 years now of really intense open source development to try to build a system that is would enable a university or college to teach your students remotely. And it's been in use at Carleton University for over 2 years now, and lots of work's gone on in it.
That sounds excellent. So just as a kind of an overview, what kind of things does Big Blue Button allow you to do? Obviously, teleconferencing, sharing your desktop, perhaps. What kind of features does it have?
Right. So maybe the best way to give an example is by contrasting it. So we're using Skype right now, so you can see me and I can see you, which is great. I mean, if you wanted to do one-on-one, man, Skype is the way to go. However, if you wanted to enable 20 students remotely to attend this lecture and to be able to collaborate with them in real time, you're tipping into something that requires a server, a conferencing server, a voice conferencing server, a video conferencing server, slide sharing, and a chat, all those things wrapped up together. And that's what BigBlueButton does. We build on about 15 open source projects to enable a student who only needs a computer that can run Flash. So we use Flash as the client. And we have a back-end server that accepts connections from the Flash clients. The teacher can go in. He or she has permissions to upload slides. The students would see those slides. And they can sit back and watch the teacher interact with the slides, move the mouse around, and chat. And there it is. Yes, there's a video of it or a screenshot of it. So you can have multiple webcams. So unlike Skype, which, you know, at some point, whether it's 2, 3, or 4 users, the video will drop. You know, we've had it up to 20 simultaneous webcams on BigBlueButton. You can have like 25 people in the voice conference system, and there's controls to mute and unmute people. And then there's the slides, which we can upload a PDF, or using OpenOffice, we can convert any document OpenOffice can recognize into a PDF. And then that can be synchronized through all the viewers. That's what we basically have been working on. And then it's sort of like there are a lot of systems out there. There are a lot of commercial web conferencing systems. They're very sophisticated. They're very powerful. The metaphor for BigBlueButton, the way we came up with the name, was we wanted to make setting up a virtual classroom as simple as pressing a metaphorical BigBlueButton. So we've just been trying to just keep it as simple as possible. Not try to do every feature, recognizing that most universities and colleges, the teachers walking into a class, they just want to upload their slides and talk to the remote students, maybe see them, have the students see them, have a good quality audio, and have a good session and have it recorded at the end so that students who couldn't make it to class could watch it.
And the only thing that a student needs on their computer to access this is the Flash plugin, is the Adobe Flash plugin, is that right?
Yeah, and I'll give a big shout out to Adobe. They do a great job on the Flash plugin. I mean, you know there's always vulnerabilities and they're upgrading it and so on. It's no different than any other software. But they ship Flash on Mac, Unix, and PC. And I can tell you, in an earlier company I was involved with, we did a Java-based applet. This is back in 97 to 2004. And it was not write once, run everywhere. It's probably now, right? But not back then. And I can tell you that on the Flash side, it's been really good for us. We haven't had to try to figure out why Flash works on one system and not the other. So yes, students only need to have Flash. If you want to share your desktop, you need to have Java installed. And that's because Flash can't access the browser. It can't look outside the browser and look at your desktop. So we just start up an applet that will capture frames of your desktop and set it up to the server. You need that if you're going to be the presenter, but if you're just a student, Flash is all you need.
I know that this is built primarily for end users who may or may not be open source enthusiasts, right? But I'm just kind of curious, have you gotten a lot of flack back about using Flash? I know that a lot of times in my conversations with open source guys, they're like, oh, Flash, I hate Flash, it's closed source, blah, blah, blah. Have you gotten any negative feedback about that?
We do get occasionally, right? And I'll share with you a funny example. So I was talking with one of the people who were involved with like HTML5, and I was showing them BigBlueButton, and they were at a college. And after we were using it, he said, "Well, why aren't you guys using HTML5?" And there's some technical challenges right now with HTML5 that prevent us doing what we do with Flash. And primarily, it's accessing the user's webcam and the audio stream. So, you know, you take it for granted that if you open up Flash, you can capture audio and video, but that's not easy to do in HTML5. It's good for streaming stuff that comes from the server, but it's the capture of it. So, and it's not there yet. And when it is there, you know, we'll use it. We've done some prototypes where we've connected I apologize. So that's
someone
the
angry
phone.
About the Flash ringing up now.
Yeah, that's Adobe.
So
yeah.
it actually is worth pointing out. I'm one of the developers of BigBlueButton. So there's a core group of people that have been working on this for 2.5 years. I'm also the CEO of a company called Blindside Networks, and we provide commercial support for BigBlueButton. Hopefully I didn't hang up on a customer there. but that's how the project funds itself, is we help universities and colleges with deploying, branding, scaling, and integrating BigBlueButton. Hang on one second.
Somebody's very persistent.
Yes.
I must let that go to to, it's going to ring through more times. This just proves that this is live. So this isn't
that's,
you know?
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
But I'll finish up the earlier point with regards to the HTML5. And that's just, HTML5 isn't there yet to capture the audio and video. It could be a client, so it could participate by viewing, and we've been exploring that. But yes, we have gotten some pushback. And to finish the story, this gentleman I was talking to said, yeah, you should be using HTML5. And then he sort of made a comment, well, this stuff actually worked. I didn't have to install anything on my computer to get BigBlueButton running. Well, that's the goal, right? So when HTML5 is there, we'll move to it. And until then, again, kudos to Adobe. They do a great job with Flash.
Right. What about open source alternatives to Flash? Do they work well with the system?
So there's sort of two parts of that. There's the open source alternative on the client, which there really isn't any, right? You're using the Flash plugin. On the server, you could use the Adobe's Flash Media Server, but we're using the Red 5 server, which is an open source implementation of the Flash Media Server. And the Red 5 project turned out, the timing was perfect. Had we started to do BigBlueButton 5 years ago, we would have had to write a lot of the server components. It turned out at the time that we did the first version of BigBlueButton, like way back 3 years ago, the Red 5 project just got started. So when we revved the architecture, we looked at Red 5 and said, wow, okay, if these guys can pull it off, that will simplify what we need to do on the back end. And the Red 5 project's done really well, and we've been building on it since the beginning, I think since version 0.4, and they're up to 0.91 right now. So we really do stand on the shoulders of others. So on the server side, yes, there's an open source option, Red 5. On the client side, you do need the Flash plugin, but the interface for BigBlueButton is all open source. Our code is hosted at GitHub. The project itself is at Google Code, and we were actually accepted into the Google Summer of Code last year, and we had two students work on BigBlueButton. We had two student slots. We had, I think it was 79 students apply, and we had two students, and I can share with you more about it, but one of them has been working on record and playback, and that's the last big feature that we're pushing hard to get into BigBlueButton, because the day that a university or college can do a real-time classroom, the voice quality is good, the audio quality is, the voice and video quality is good, the slides are good, and then they can record that, and it's integrated with, say, Moodle or Sakai, then you really do have a viable option for an open source system.
Right. I mean, it's got to be huge, right? I mean, if you ever watch any of the online lectures from some of the big universities out there, they have to have a camera crew basically involved in recording those lectures, and then editors have to go and edit add the slides sometimes and things like that. So if you could do that automatically, it really enables true distance learning where you may not even have to have a classroom.
So that's the key, right? And I can share with you, there's a bunch of submarkets that are really interested in open source web conferencing. I mean, one of them is online tutoring. As the internet becomes more pervasive, you could get teachers anywhere in the world who could match up with students. So we see a lot of interest in BigBlueButton in the online tutoring. And we see a lot of interest in it with, again, universities and colleges who tend to put their classes online and broadcast them, or are using it for ancillary capabilities such as a virtual office hours for the teacher, or giving students the ability to collaborate, which is not too easy to do if you're paying for a commercial web conferencing system. So there's areas that we're being used in that, you know, are around the educational space.
What about how does this compare to other video conferencing projects? I mean, I'm familiar with DimDim. Of course, I've used services like WebEx and those kinds of things. But DimDim is the one that I think is also based on open source. Or at least they claim to be based on open source software. So how does this compare? I know that one is more of a they're doing the hosting for you. DimDim does the hosting, obviously. And you guys, I think, are rolling this out so universities can do and can host this. But how in terms of features and the software that you're using, I mean, how does it compare to something like DimDim?
So it turns out we're using a lot of the same components. Like we use a Red 5 server. They use it. The OpenOffice, PDF to SWF to convert PowerPoint or PDF files to SWF files, Shockwave format. We're not trying to set up Blindside Networks as being a hosting company. We are enabling others to host BigBlueButton, and our model is to support them. So DimDim does provide an open source version of its software, but it's a bit old. It's not up to date with their latest release. And if you wanted to host your own DimDim server, you can't. You can use their open source release again, but it's a bit out of date. We thought at the beginning, if we're going to do this as an open source project, we wanted to do it as a true open source project. So the code is out there. We have very active mailing lists. We like to think we have a strong community around BigBlueButton. And because of our openness and our willingness to take feedback, and the secret we found is to actually release BigBlueButton as a formal product. So we've gone through 9 iterative releases so far for BigBlueButton. And there is no pro version. There's nothing that you have to like pay for. It is all of BigBlueButton is in the GitHub repository. So in terms of other projects, we think we're probably a bit truer to the open source mantra. And we think in the long run, that's probably going to help us grow faster.
Mm. So you mentioned that the intention is to encourage universities to host their own servers running BigBlueButton. So let's say I wanted to do that. What kind of thing do I need to run it on? Same hardware kind of specs and so on?
Yeah, so it's a good question. We recommend any computer you buy today for $1,000 is going to be a quad core with 8 gig of memory and 500 gig hard disk. If you can put a decent computer like that, you have it on your network. Most universities have high bandwidth networks. You have a system capable of hosting BigBlueButton. So you can hook it up to your network. You install Ubuntu 10.04 32-bit or 64-bit on it. And then at that point, you would install BigBlueButton. And we've basically created the installation through packages. So we bundle it as Ubuntu packages and with a couple commands, the last one ending in sudo apt-get install BigBlueButton, you can take that server and turn it into a BigBlueButton server in about 15 minutes. And then as we release new versions of BigBlueButton, we update the packaging. So you just go to the server, you do sudo apt-get update and sudo apt-get upgrade, and you are now current with the latest release of BigBlueButton.
Yeah, cool. So do I need to add a repository for that kind of thing to my Ubuntu system, or do you have packages in the main universe, as they call it, in Ubuntu?
No. We have our own package. We have our own repository. Mm. So you would add the BigBlueButton repository to it. You would add the public key. You'd do an apt-get update. You would install either FreeSwitch or Asterisk, and then you would install BigBlueButton. It would be great if we got BigBlueButton into the universe. But I got to tell you, writing, doing packaging is a black art. We've been working on it. We've been doing the packaging for about a year and a half. It's gone through a number of iterations. And it's at the point now where, we recognize that if there was 8 pages of install instructions to install BigBlueButton, because there are a lot of components you need, I mean, we would be spending all of our time in the forums just debugging installation. But we put the effort into doing the packaging. It's pretty solid. If you do it on Ubuntu 10.04, 32-bit or 64-bit, you are going to have a server running. And if you have any problems, you post to our mailing list. There's a number of them, but one is BigBlueButton-setup, and we will help you out. We will make sure that you get your server up and running.
Ah, okay. So Ubuntu is the kind of recommended platform for this, is it, for installing and so on?
Yes. So, and therein lies a choice, right? There's 2 major packaging systems out there. There's the RPM packaging, and then there's the Debian or Ubuntu. There's a couple others, like Gentoo and others, but the RPM and Debian are the main ones. We actually had support for both in a version about 2 iterations ago, but the effort to support and test both packaging systems was just taking a ginormous amount of time. And we'd rather be spending that time developing BigBlueButton. So we had to make a call and we said, okay, We can't do both really well. We're going to do one, and we're going to do one really, really well, so that if someone uses it, it's going to be solid. So we picked Ubuntu, and we have the packaging for Ubuntu for the latest release of BigBlueButton. And then, interestingly enough, so the packaging for CentOS now is well out of date, and it's not supported. We haven't updated it. And the question was, you know, would anybody care? Like, if we stop support for CentOS, would our doors be beaten down? And I can share with you that we do get the occasional call of people who really want to run it on CentOS for very valid reasons. And our response has been, well, okay, this is probably going to take us about 20 days of development to update this version. You know, this is open source, so you know how this works. If you want it, you can wait for it, or you can help accelerate it. And I would say to people, you know, you can help accelerate this if it's important to your company. And the conversations always lead back to the end. It's like, okay, well, I guess we'll just use the Debian version for now, Ubuntu version, because it's a black box. We're going to set up a server. It's going to run BigBlueButton. It has an API. And at that point, the third-party applications don't really care what's on the server. So I suspect that someday a company is going to say to us, yes, we really want CentOS. And then we will pick up where we were. We'll update it, and then you will be a commercially supported CentOS version. But until then, it was a quantity versus quality, and we chose quality. It's there's a really good packaging right now for Ubuntu, and you'll get it running in 15 minutes.
Yeah, cool. So you mentioned that you install Ubuntu, and then you add the repository and install BigBlueButton. Do you have a kind of a live CD, or could you make a respin of, say, Ubuntu that I could just install everything in one go? Pre-set up, is that something you would think about?
So we've essentially done that because we provide you a virtual machine as well. So the two main ways people try a BigBlueButton is they download it, install it on Ubuntu, or we provide a ready-to-go VMware virtual machine. So you can download it, you can run it under VMware Fusion on Mac, you can run under VMware Player on Windows and Unix, and it will power itself up, and it will essentially complete an Ubuntu-based installation. The VM is based on Ubuntu 10.04, 32-bit. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, you know, on your VMware player, on your PC, you will have BigBlueButton running. You'll have desktop sharing, voice over IP, all of it. It's all there. Now, you wouldn't run that as a production server, but for purposes of trying it out, it's the least barrier. And I can share with you, we actually figured out a while back that the VM was actually a pretty good way to do development. So here's the problem we had, and this may be shared by other open source projects. You've got a fairly complex system, lots of components. It takes a number of steps to set up the development environment. And our goal is to make it easier for developers to participate in the project. What we ended up doing was prepackaging all the development tools inside the VM. So this is how we develop in BigBlueButton right now. We have VMware Workstation running on our Unix, our Windows machines. We use FlexBuilder. We compile inside the VM. So it's not like you're compiling on Windows and then let's see how it works under Unix. We compile from source inside the VM running in VMware Workstation. We check in through Git on the VM. And that reduces the differences between a development environment and a production environment. We basically use the VM as our development environment so that when it turns around and we run it on a production environment, it's been built on Ubuntu 10.04, it's been tested on Ubuntu 10.04, it's been packaged on Ubuntu 10.04, and it installs on Ubuntu 10.04.
And do you offer, I know you mentioned VMware, but what about VirtualBox? Do you, is it a VDMK file that I could import into VirtualBox? Have you tried that?
Yeah, and we've got instructions on our Google Code site on how to do it. We at some point may go to the open virtualization format, but most people run VMware, and honestly, if our community said, "Hey, we want an OVM or OVF format," we could probably do it. But yeah, right now it does run in VirtualBox, and you know, we've been at trade shows demonstrating BigBlueButton, and we've been using it under VirtualBox under those circumstances.
Great, awesome. Another question is, you know, you mentioned that you're using open source, and you started mentioning some of the open source programs, but maybe you can kind of give us a rundown of what other open source software you use to make this work.
Sure. We have our little tagline that we're based on 15 open source projects. So if you count them, let's see if I get to all of them. There's ActiveMQ, there's Asterix, Asterix Java, the Flex SDK, GhostScript, Grails, Image Magic, MySQL, Nginx, Red 5, SWF Tools, Tomcat, Ubuntu, Zuggler, OpenOffice, and FreeSwitch.
Wow. Awesome. I've used a lot of, some of those, obviously like Image Magic and some of those programs. So I'm familiar with some of them. It's great that you can use them to, you know, kind of cobble them together to make your own system. And it's the same with, I find when I'm doing, you know, trying to use open source tools to make my video podcast, it's the same thing. You can find tools out there to get this done. I'm kind of curious too, who is using this? I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm assuming they're mostly universities. Can you name some names here? I mean, who's using this and how big of a classroom or how big of a community are they using it for?
So I can't give you specific names. I mean, I can certainly share with you like Carleton University, which is the birthplace of BigBlueButton. They use it quite a bit. They have classes up to 25 people, which is about how large we recommend it. University of Lancaster is a user. They're actually contributed to the Sakai integration of BigBlueButton. Looking at our packages downloads, so there's nothing in BigBlueButton that's going to track the usage, but we can tell certainly from servers hitting our package archives, there are hundreds of servers out there running BigBlueButton right now. There was a question posted to our forum, and it was, I think University of Vermont basically created their own server and posted it up online and had a question about it. We think that there's probably upwards between 500 BigBlueButton servers out there right now running. And we know what the market wants, and we know once we get record and playback in place, if we do a good job of it, and then there will be a lot more servers running. So yeah, it's been an overnight success that's taken at least 3 years, and will probably take another year or two. But let's just say we're really determined to make this project successful.
Well, it sounds like it. It sounds like you've got a good plan. Before the show started, you know, you were pointing out all of your post-it notes there in the background of all the features that, you know, you want to develop. I think that's great. And it sounds like, you know, being at a university, you are keyed in to what universities are looking for. So you've got your market, you know, fairly narrowly focused on the market, excuse me, that you want to focus on. That wasn't redundant, was it? So that kind of leads me to the next question, which is how does this, you mentioned Moodle and some of them, and I don't know if you integrate with Blackboard or some of the other services that universities use for their classroom collaboration. So I'm just kind of curious, how does this integrate today and what are your plans for integration in the future?
So we put a lot of effort into basically creating an API for BigBlueButton. So if you think of what goes on in a virtual classroom, there's the before part, the during, and the after, where the during is the real-time collaboration and the before part is all like the setup and scheduling and so on. We don't do any of the before after part now. We do basically the real-time collaboration, and we have an API. So there's integrations with Moodle and Sakai, the two open source, major open source systems. We also have integrations with Joomla, WordPress, Tiki, Redmine, eFront. I always miss one. They're all listed at the BigBlueButton website. But if you have, let's say, a Moodle integration, you can download a Moodle activity module. If you have a Sakai integration, you can download the Sakai plugin, point it to a BigBlueButton server. So you'd set up a server at the university or college. And then from inside of the learning content management system, you can schedule classes and students can join from within. You mentioned Blackboard. We actually have the ability to create a Blackboard building block for BigBlueButton. It was one of the things that we were going to do when someone came to us and said, yes, we really want to do this. And again, it's sort of like the CentOS. No one's come to us yet and said, okay, we'll pay you to do this. And honestly, we're really focused on the open source side of it. If you look at what's going on in the learning content management space, the growth of Moodle and Sakai is phenomenal. And that's the area that we want to play with and integrate with.
Mm. We talked a bit earlier about the fact that you build on a lot of different open source projects. Does that affect your release schedule or anything? Do you find that pulling together so many different disparate strands, if you like, does that affect your ability to release regularly on time? Is there any impact there?
So It's another good question. Most of the systems that we build on are actually fairly stable right now. Like you look at FreeSwitch and it's at version like 1.06. It's been out for a while. It's really battle tested. It doesn't change a lot. Things like Tomcat and Nginx, these are fairly stable systems now. Red 5 has been under active development. So we look at the new version of that and we test it before we integrate it. But no, most of the things we build on right now are actually pretty stable. So a lot of the work that we're doing is on the front-end interface. So we had to write the whole BigBlueButton client. And then the back-end modules, some of the modules to do desktop sharing, some of them to do like the SIP client. We took the Red 5 phone and we modified it so that we can bridge the audio from the user through Red 5 into a back-end voice conference system such as Asterisk or FreeSwitch. The biggest challenge for us, which is probably no different than other open source projects, is just testing, coordination and testing. So we do, we try to treat, again, as I mentioned, we found the secret is if you want to build a good quality open source project is you treat it like a product. So you do formal planning, design, development, testing, packaging, release, and support. And so each of our iterations, we try to do that. And the testing part is the challenging, but it actually gets easier over time when you get more users using your product. So right now on our developer mailing list, we have, we just passed 700 members a few weeks ago. So when we do go into our testing phase, we have a community out there that we create packages for the next release. So there's kind of like the standard core release that is one package archive. And then there's like a dev archive, which is being built up to date through Hudson. So we run a continuous integration server that when code is checked into GitHub, it pulls it out, compiles it, builds the packaging, installs it on the repository, and remotely updates a dev build server. So at devbuild.bigbluebutton.org, it's always running the latest master. We use that to test. We test with our community. And then at some point we call it, we do the release. We take a break for a few minutes, and then we look at what we want to do for the next iteration. And what we're working on right now is the record and playback, and we're pretty excited about it.
How difficult is that to coordinate between all the different packages? I mean, you listed 15, I think, open source packages, and then you've got Flash and other things going on, right? So, I mean, can you talk about that? I mean, how difficult is it when you've got a problem? How difficult is that to pinpoint? And then how do you ever have to go back to those developers of those individual open source projects and say, hey, you know, we found this bug. You know, do you contribute back to those projects? Can you talk about that a little bit?
So we've been active in the Red 5 community. We've been talking to some of the members. I mean, kudos to them. They're the reason why we're here. That the Red 5 project, and we've got one of the members of the Red 5 team on our team as well. So we're pretty close to them. They've done a good job. It's kind of like as we get to the point where we may hit the bugs that are in their system, they're kind of fixing them at the same time. So even though we started off the same, Red 5 is, I think, a little bit ahead of us, and then we kind of are just a little bit behind in terms of, oh, okay, let's use this new feature, and it's been in Red 5 for a while, and it's kind of settled down. I'll tell you, the thing which saves us is the two things is packaging. One is we can do a clean install of BigBlueButton in under 15 minutes, right from scratch. So right away, it flushes out any problems in anything new features we add, or if we have to add a new component that's not packaged already. So for example, like Tomcat and Nginx, we don't write the packaging for it. The Ubuntu community already has it, FreeSwitch as well. So by translating our development work into a package, it immediately shakes down all the, you know, any installation issues that otherwise would hit if you just added a couple lines to an install instructions to say, please install this. The other thing that helps us is we provide a utility, a shell script with BigBlueButton called bbbconf. It's just a shell script that lets you start and stop BigBlueButton, but it has kind of like a bunch of tests in it. So if you run bbbconf -check, it'll run about 25 tests to test the configuration of BigBlueButton to see whether it can talk to itself, did all the processes run, are the directories the right permission, is there any problems connecting to Asterisk or FreeSwitch. And we've built this up over time to the point where it would be hard to go into someone's system and figure out what's wrong, but we built all these checks that we're pretty comfortable now that if you install BigBlueButton from packages and BBBconf runs through the checks and everything looks good, you've got a working BigBlueButton system. So we've done those things to help reduce the effort it takes to kind of build a complete system out of all these disparate open source packages.
And that's got to help too, like you said, with as you're doing support for these systems. I mean, all those things that you develop to do bug fixing and things like that and debugging yourself in the code must help when you have to go then support an end user.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so we take BigBlueButton, we run it through profiling tools. We've been looking at, you know, the memory usage, the object allocation, the threading and so on. What we've also benefited from is a lot of times, you know, someone will post to our mailing list, they've had a problem with installation or the server's not running. So what we'll do is we'll send them a direct email and say, hey, are you comfortable giving us temporary root access to your server? It's usually a new server they've set up. And more often than not, they'll say, yeah, here's the username, password, and log in. We'll log in. We'll learn about how BigBlueButton's running inside of their environment, and we'll incorporate that learning into the packaging or the software so that, again, every time we solve a problem, we try to make the packaging more intelligent or the check more intelligent or the software more intelligent so that it actually doesn't get hit again. And now, having done that for over a year and a half since the packaging kicked in, again, if you want to install BigBlueButton, go to Google Code, fire up a 10.04 machine, run through the packaging, and if you can't get it installed, you post the mailing list and you say, Fred, I can't get this installed, and we'll help you out.
That's very cool. I was curious, how many people work on BigBlueButton? And obviously, you've got a core team there, so who's involved?
Right. So the core team is actually primarily composed of folks at Blindside Networks. So Blindside Networks is the students and myself who spun out of Carleton University. I say students, they're master students. You know, they have homes, families, wives, kids, right? We still think of them as students. We're the ones who take on the responsibility of coordinating the release, testing it, packaging it, supporting it. There's Jeremy Thomerson at Generic Conferencing. So Generic Conferencing is a company that does Asterisk voice conferencing, and they added BigBlueButton web conferencing. And Jeremy provided our API. He integrated the API. He wrote it, designed it, and integrated it. There's Tiago Jacobs, who's one of the committers to the Red 5 mailing list. And then there's a number of other open source developers who have become involved with the project. Our translation, our localization translation was done by two guys in China, Zai and Chen. And then a lot of the translation was done by DJP, one of the members of our mailing list. So we have BigBlueButton localized into 15 languages, and we didn't have to do any of it. It was the community who did that part.
Excellent. So is it easy for people to get involved? Do you encourage people to join your GitHub site and commit stuff as well, maybe?
Yeah, and that's the challenging part, Dan, because as we go deeper and deeper into, you know, real-time voice over IP and all the complexity of the system, there's a lot of moving pieces here. So we have put a lot of effort into documentation on setting up the development environment, the architecture diagrams, I mean, supporting developers in the mailing list. But we recognize that there's a lot to learn to contribute to BigBlueButton. So if we see someone on our mailing list trying to do something with BigBlueButton, you know, we will help them out because we recognize it's those people who eventually will get to the point where, you know, you look at them and say, oh, wow, you're really starting to contribute. We'd like to invite you to be able to commit code. And so the way we've done, there's various ways to handle how people commit to an open source project. The way we decided to do it at the beginning of BigBlueButton was we used the joint contributor agreement from Sun. We modified it slightly. So it says BigBlueButton instead of Java. But we ask everybody who wants to commit code to sign that. So there's never any question that this project can be, the code that's involved in it can be released under an open source license. And I can share with you as well, we have been moving to setting up an independent, not-for-profit organization, so called the BigBlueButton Inc., or we sometimes call it the BigBlueButton Foundation, but the legal name is BigBlueButton Inc., where Blindside Networks is going to shift over the copyright to this not-for-profit because we recognize that most successful software projects do have an independent not-for-profit organization that oversees the development and growth of it. And we want BigBlueButton to be running not on 100 machines or 500. We want it running on thousands of machines. And even though we're the folks who started it, we are very interested in working with other companies. The FreeSwitch integration, for example, was contributed by an external company. So if someone out there looks at BigBlueButton and says, this is great, but it doesn't do A, B, and C, and they have the desire to do A, B, and C, we would like to work with them. And then all users of BigBlueButton will benefit from it.
Mm. Now, while I was reading up on BigBlueButton on Wikipedia, I noticed a little bit where they said that you moved from Google Code to GitHub in an effort to encourage developers. So I was curious, was there something about Google Code that put people off, or is there something about GitHub that attracts people, or how did that work?
It was the difference between centralized source code management and distributed source code management. In Google Code, you know, for you to build something, it had to be checked in. And you couldn't easily pull in other people's changes. I mean, this is why Git is doing very well, is you can actually have your own repository and you can pull in updates from the core BigBlueButton repository into your fork or branch. So you can maintain current, but you can also have your own changes. So we recognize that if we wanted to get developers involved in BigBlueButton, anything we could do to make it easier for them to participate is going to benefit us in the long run. So it took a bit of effort on our part to move our continuous integration system over to pull from GitHub, to understand how Git works. We made the transition two iterations ago, and it's worked out really well. You'll notice if you go to GitHub, there's a number of forks of BigBlueButton, and we welcome people to fork the code and improve it. And then, of course, we really welcome you to give the changes back so that we can incorporate it in, and then it becomes part of the release.
Excellent. So I was just curious. I mean, at the start, we talked about your lovely, for the benefit of listeners, the lovely wall behind you with lots of lots of post-it notes on it about the future of BigBlueButton. And you've mentioned recording and playback is a big thing. Is there anything else that you could tell us about maybe where you're planning to take BigBlueButton in future?
Yes. So we want to have a really solid core. We want to have a really solid core for the voice, the web, the video, the desktop sharing, the record and playback. And if you think of some other very successful open source projects, and Eclipse comes to mind. Eclipse basically has this really core platform which other people can build on it. So if you had an idea to do some type of collaboration and you wanted video and audio as well, our vision is that BigBlueButton could be a platform on which you can build your collaboration component, add it to BigBlueButton, but then all the record and playback, all the other modules are all there for you. So just as we have an API today to connect external applications to BigBlueButton, we want to have sort of a component API so that you can have these building blocks. And if you want to add a new module, say a survey module or something, you would have the means to add it and build on it. So that modularity is one area that we're looking to go to. The second is, of course, access to from multiple endpoints. So at some point, you're going to see an Android or an iPhone or an iPad, whether we do it or someone else is going to do it. It's inevitable where students or users on that will be able to participate in it. And they'll be able to, depending on how much support for HTML5, maybe they can be view only, so they're getting the stream of audio and video, or maybe they can do two-way. But you're going to be able to basically have a component architecture. You're going to be able to have multiple endpoints. And then the final part is basically modularity of BigBlueButton itself. So today, if you look at BigBlueButton, you fire up a BigBlueButton client. You have your voice, your web, your video, your chat, your desktop share. So all of those components are useful. Wouldn't it be great to just take the voice component out and embed it in your website, or the video component embedded in your website? We think of it as the BigBlueButton toolbox. So where we'd like to get to is where the components are actually standalone, which requires, of course, a BigBlueButton server. But if you only needed chat, could you just use chat from BigBlueButton? Of course, you have this BigBlueButton server running, which means next when you want to go to voice or to video or to slides, it's going to be very easy for you because the server is already there. And so those are the three areas. You know, we take scalability and solid and core and well documentation for granted. That's what we're building in the project. That's our goal: the high quality remote learning experience, the modularity, the multiple endpoints. And then actually having the BigBlueButton component stand alone, we think as we fill in though that roadmap, BigBlue Button becomes a platform. Right now, it's more of an application. But if it can become a platform, then we've built something that a lot of other open source projects could build on, just like we've built on the project, other projects themselves.
So yeah, of course.
I've got to ask just a quick question about that, because you brought up something that kind of intrigues me a little bit. Obviously, you're not the only ones that are interested, especially in the iPad, right? As a learning tool and as an interface. I was talking to a company just last week who is also really, really interested in this, and they're wishing that HTML5 supported some of the functions that you talked about earlier because they want to get on the iPad. So I'm curious if you've looked at FaceTime. You know, Apple calls their implementation open implementation. So I'm curious, because I can see potentially Apple moving that to the next version of the iPad. Have you looked at that as a possibly a way to get these services onto an iPhone or an iPad device?
So it would be great, but they're just different architectures. I mean, Apple uses the AAC encoding, the H.264 codec. It's a great system, but of course, it's a complete system under Apple. For us, we use Flash with Red5, which means we use the real-time message protocol, the RTMP protocol. So it's a different protocol. It's a different video encoders. There's just too many pieces that are different. I think what you're going to see is Apple is going to come out with FaceTime on the iPad, of course. It's going to be great for collaboration. The iPad is going to do very well in the educational market space. We would love to see BigBlueButton do very well as well, and that if you're on an iPad, you can participate in some manner, and that, you know, the recorded sessions could be uploaded to iTunes U, for example. So maybe it wasn't done in FaceTime, but the end result of 20 people getting together in an online classroom and the teacher talking and using the whiteboard and getting people feedback and so on, all that was captured and then was played back inside a QuickTime file that was available through iTunes U.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Yep. Now, something I meant to ask earlier on and completely forgot, probably should have asked it right at the start, but what license is the BigBlueButton code released under?
So it's interesting. I'll give you a quick backstory. There used to be a component of it. It's LGPL right now, except for the voiceover IP component, the Red5 phone, because that's GPL. But everything in BigBlueButton we've done is LGPL. It actually used to be the desktop sharing component, the client part, the Java applet that runs, and the server part that broadcasts out all the messages. We wrote both the client and the server. We used to have that as AGPL. It was because we built under Zuggler early on for it, and which Zuggler was AGPL at that time. So it used to be this AGPL component, and we had the dual licensing. And we generated some revenue from that where companies said, we like your desktop sharing component, but we don't like AGPL. We'd like a commercial license. And we did that for a while, but you know, Dan, we looked at it and said, okay, the AGPL can generate some revenue, but I think there's more revenue to generate if we can get thousands of BigBlueButton servers running out there. So let's just make it really easy for thousands of BigBlueButton servers to run. So now it's primarily LGPL, and the Red5 phone component is GPL.
Oh, excellent. Now I have to ask you Randall's favorite question, which is Vi or Emacs. Do you have a preference?
Vi. I've been doing Vi since
VI.
The beginning.
I should say VI. I know a lot of people say VI. I say Vi, but there we go.
I say Vi too, but I my fingers just they memorize Vi. The search and replace, I could do that in my sleep, you know.
Excellent. Oh, cool. So anything else you want to mention before we wrap it up?
I like to say that we've looked at other open source projects. We tried to look at what made them successful and where they had struggled with. Certainly documentation, certainly support, making it a real open source project. We have built BigBlueButton so that if a developer wants to get involved, there's a means to do it. Check out our FAQ. If a commercial company wants to integrate BigBlueButton, others have done it. The path is there. Blindside Networks is one of the companies involved, but we try very hard not to position ourselves as the company. We recognize that if we can build a viable ecosystem of users, universities and colleges, commercial companies, and end users who are all benefiting from and contributing to BigBlueButton, then this will become a very successful project. And we are very determined to make this a successful project.
Excellent. So thank you very much for joining us today, Fred. And if people want to find out more about Big Blue Button, they should go to bigbluebutton.org. I'm assuming it's the best place. Anywhere else people should go to have a look?
That's the best place. From there, you'll see the links to Google Code. You'll see links to the companies providing support for Big Blue Button. You'll see links to the integration modules. You can also follow the blog, and there's a Twitter account as well, which we'll post stuff as well. And we'll post it. We'll tweet when this recorded session becomes available.
Excellent. Okay, thanks very much for joining us. Take care. We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
My pleasure, guys.